Thanks, Aiden, for the scripture reading. We'll get to that in just a few minutes. Take this opportunity, however, to thank Brother Howard for filling in for me a couple weeks ago when the COVID struck. So I'm going to preach today instead of him. I could have got it all switched around, but I appreciate that. Also, I hope many of you were here to hear Brother Jason's lessons this morning. Although we didn't collaborate on it, I can see some of the same thinking going on, you know. Well, I've got a preaching assignment. What do I preach on? Oh, well, there ought to be a sermon in that. And Jason, you know, when I listened to you this morning, I thought about, I used to hunt mushrooms up in Michigan. And I come up on a tree, and I find a bunch of mushrooms down there, and I get down, and I think I got all of them. And then you walk on the other side of the tree and turn and look back, and you wonder, how in the world did I miss all those? So there's a sermon for me. If I ever get out to preach in another congregation that didn't hear your sermon, they may get one on how to hunt mushrooms. But anyhow, appreciate the lesson this morning. But one of the things that kind of goes between the two sermons is the matter of eyes. You know, Jason talked about getting a different perspective this morning. And it's all about the use of the eyes. But how many of you have ever seen the movie The Karate Kid? Don't see too many of them. It's one of the movies that it seems must be pretty cheap because it's on the channel about every other week anymore. And I kind of like it. But in that particular movie, Mr. Miyagi, and what he's trying to teach the kid karate, and they're bowing, and the kid looks at the floor, and he smacks him and says, "Look I, always look I." And I got to thinking about that, and there's a lot of things that in my past life that kind of rang true. I had a baseball coach, and if you've ever played baseball and tried to coach it or maybe gotten out with your sons and had a pass game, one of the things that you tell them is watch the ball into the glove. You know, if you want to catch it, you don't just stick your glove out here and look somewhere else, but you watch the ball in there. And then when they come up to play to the plate, when it comes time to batting, you always say, watch the ball hit the bat. Some of you are old enough to remember Pete Rose. And I always remember one of the things that they would show about him is he would get up there to bat, and he would watch that ball. If he didn't swing at it, he would look it right into the catcher's glove. But the idea of doing that. Now, my son Darren back there played some baseball in his younger years. And he pitched, and you go out there and pass with him. I used to get down and crouch behind the plate. If I got down now, I'd never get back up. But I, you know, got a target here. I tell him, don't look at the glove. Look at that little spot in there. Pretend there's a fly in there, and you want to kill that fly. And we understand that if we look at these things, that we can do that. Well, also had a basketball coach. This basketball coach would say, you know, look at the back of the rim. And if you know what it is, you know, the rim's 10 feet tall, and when you look at the back, you can see just under the front. And he said, now, you know, I know I'm telling you this, but says, you're an engineering type. Here's why. If you shoot for the back of the rim and you fall a little short, you get nothing but net. If you hit the back of the rim, it'll probably bounce up and hit the backboard and come back in. And if you're really short, it may just hit the front of the rim enough so that it just rolls right on in, since you got a better shot. So he talked about that. And then when we get up there and get ready to play defense, he told me, he says, look at the belly button. That guy never goes anywhere without his belly button. And so you would do that when you're playing defense. You would try to anticipate his move so that he didn't score. But then there's a football coach. We all sometimes watch football. And you hear the commentators, you know, here's a guy that's going out there and he's in the wide open, and all of a sudden the ball goes through his hands. Perfect pass, wasn't the quarterback's fault. The guy said, you know what he did? He looked upfield to see where he was going before he caught the ball. And so we do those kinds of things. And then in track and field, you know, one of the things that you have to do in track and field is you have to stay in your lane. You know, you get out there and you get 8 or 10 guys across the track, however many they have, and it's a 40-yard dash. you don't finish the race in the other guy's lane. You lose. So you always have to look where you're going and see what's happening. And then an archery coach, never did do any of that, but I heard people say, aim small, miss small, is a word that they use. So what you're looking at, and if you look at very small and try to hit that thing, you don't miss very wide. Now, if you kind of missed the point here a little bit about the eye and how important the eye is, Matthew chapter 6 and verse 22, Matthew 6, 22 says, the lamp of the body is the eye. If therefore your eye is good, your whole body will be full of light. But if your eye is bad, your whole body will be full of darkness, and therefore the light that is in you, and how great is that darkness? We understand that, if we don't see the ball, we don't catch the ball. We don't see the ball, we don't hit the ball. But here's a game that maybe you're all familiar with. Ever played this one? What do you think your success is if you're blindfolded? And this is kind of what the passage is telling us, that if we go about things blindfolded without being able to see and seeing in the spiritual sense, that we don't have a whole lot of chance for success. Now, the Apostle Paul in Philippians chapter 3 and verse 14 said, I press toward the goal for the prize of the upward call of God in Christ Jesus. So what Paul is telling us is that he's got his eye on the goal, that he's focused on getting this prize of the upward call. And that's the whole point of this particular slide, is that we need to focus on what God has told us, what God has given us. And if we take our eye off the goal, there's very little chance of success. Now, I've titled this sermon, The Christian Race. And there might be one or two of you that were around back when Lewis Hussle came up here and was going to preach to us, become a located preacher. And I told this story, I think, a couple times. But as a very young man back in West Virginia, Lewis Hussle preached at Pennsboro. And he came over to hold a meeting where my grandparents went to church. Now, for you guys today, you got it kind of easy. Back then, meetings were 2 weeks long. We didn't split it up a week in the spring and a week in the fall, but it was 2 weeks long in the middle of July. Our air conditioner was throw up the window and put a 12-inch stick in it and put a big fan in there. Preacher knew when it was time to quit when the wasps started swarming around his head. But anyhow, he came over and he put this bed sheet up. Now, I'd never seen a bed sheet. Never seen a sermon, even where the guy got up. Maybe got up and did something on a blackboard, but this bed sheet was something else. And he had The Christian Race, and he had a lot of things on it. Well, I thought that was pretty unique, but then he came over here and preached the same sermon at the old building over on Old 35. So the art of being original is forgetting where you got it. So this may not be an original sermon because I haven't forgot where I got it. But anyhow, this was what he entitled it. And he had on his bed sheet a track similar to this with a lot more artistry work on it. Had a lot of obstacles and things that it was Baden talked about or read about. We got to lay aside every weight and every sin, and he had a lot of things on there. And it was a little more detailed. And on one side here, he had the stands where the people would sit and watch this track meet and watch this race. And he talked about these being the witnesses. These witnesses that he has talked about, he went back in chapter 11 in the book of Hebrews, and he enumerated them. But they are people who have long gone, but they are still were the witnesses. Now, in the verse that was read in Hebrews chapter 12 and verse 1, it talks about running with endurance the race that is set before us. Yeah, and when I see that word endurance, I really don't think about a 40-yard dash or a 50-yard dash or a 100-yard dash. When I was in high school, I used to have to run cross-country if you wanted to play basketball because the coaches were the same. So if you didn't run cross-country, you didn't play basketball. He wouldn't let you. But cross country is a 2 mile race. We used to go out to Huffman Dam and run around the lake. And there were ditches and holes and things like that. It wasn't a nice cinder track or anything of that sort. But when I think about endurance, and at that particular time, 2 miles was pretty good endurance. But he's talking about this endurance race. And then he gets into verse 2, where it gets back into our eye situation. He says, looking to Jesus. So in this particular race, again, we're focused towards the goal. But I want you to note here in this particular verse that if you ever want to have a biblical example of sound reasoning, the apostle, and I think it's Paul, some people don't, but whoever wrote the book of Hebrews gives you a perfect example of what is sound reasoning. He talks about the witnesses. Now, there's a witness list. I went back into chapter 11 and gathered these names. If you've ever watched Perry Mason or your Matlock or some of the other law courtroom shows, they've always got a list of witnesses that they want. And so, Jeff, put your lunch away. I'm not going to talk about all these witnesses. But this is just to give you an idea of the size. This is a cloud of witnesses that was being examined. And we can look and we recognize people like Noah and Abraham and Gideon and Jephthah and Samuel. We recognize events such as the Passover and the Red Sea and Jericho. I know when we study these things in a Bible class, we go into detail, but here again, I think I'm probably talking to the choir when we talk about these names. We know all about them. And so the writer has collected all of this data, so to speak, and then he has looked at a conclusion. What do these witnesses have in common? And I think Peter probably says it best, although the writer here says that they all had obtained favor with God. But Peter, in 2 Peter chapter 3 and verse 9, 2 Peter chapter 3 and verse 9 says, the Lord is not slack concerning his promises, as some count slackness, but is long-suffering toward us, not willing that any should perish, but that all should come to repentance. So when he looks back at these and we think about the promises that were made to these people and how that they always came true, we can come to that same conclusion. Now, having drawn that conclusion, the writer is going to make an application. Now, when we look at this witness list here and we look at the way it's done, the philosophers, I guess that's the branch of science that talks about it, we'll call this an inductive method. We gather data and we draw a conclusion from the data. Then once we get that conclusion, he's going to apply what the philosophers will call the deductive method. He is going to make application. And what he says here is that seeing that we are surrounded by these witnesses and that God always fulfills his promise. Now, this sounds like an invitation, but I ain't ready to quit yet. But with all his witnesses here and that God can always fulfills his promises, what ought you to do? Now, I can look out at the congregation and I say, you know, let us get in the race. Seeing that all God has rewarded all his people, God has been true to his promises, what ought we to do? But then again, I could also apply it to each one of you as an individual. I can apply it to me as an individual. So he takes this generalization and applies it specifically. And here you have the process of sound reasoning. You find some witnesses, find some chapters and verse, put them together, find out what the common thread is, and then we can apply it to the situation at hand. So that is all well and good. Now, we're talking about the Christian race. We're talking about the application that has been made here. But there are several things that we need to know about this race. First of all, we need to get in the right race. There are many religious races being run. Now, notice what it says in 1 Timothy chapter 4 and verse 8. It says, for bodily exercise profits a little, but godliness is profitable for all things, having promise of the life that now is and of that which is to come. Yeah, you know, how many times have you heard a preacher stand up here and say, if you're a Christian, you got the best of both worlds? You live your life in the best possible manner. You have a lot of friends. You have a lot of associations. You have a lot of things that satisfy you. But you also have the hope of heaven. So you have the best of both worlds, but only if the race that you have is a godly race. Now, notice also in 1 Peter chapter 4, beginning in verse 3. 1 Peter chapter 4, beginning in verse 3. Let's see. Okay. That's where we ought to be, I think. So anyhow, he says, "For we have spent enough of our past lifetime doing the will of the Gentiles." It's a different race, isn't it? It says, "When we walked in lewdness, lusts, drunkenness, revelries, drinking parties, and abominable idolatries, in regard to these, they think it strange that you do not run." And here is our connector, if you will, back to this idea of it being a race. "With them in the same flood of dissipation, speaking evil of you." So here again, where we're trying to run the Christian race, there are other people out here running other races, and they think it's strange that you don't run with them. You know, you look at the TV, and what does it say? It says, "Go for all the gusto, grab for all the gusto. Think about number one." All these things, and we're kind of made fun of. Did anybody ever come to you and say, "You Christians never have any fun. You don't do anything that is pleasurable. You're all so somber. You're all so this and that," and they make fun of you. Well, this is what Peter is talking about here. They're going to make fun of us because we don't run in the same race that they're running in. Then this was the thing I should have gotten up here, but it's other races are more popular. You know, people will advertise. They want you to get in their race. But then secondly, there are other races that are more profitable. Notice in Jude 11, it says, "Woe to them, for they have gone in the way of Cain, have run greedily in the error of Balaam for profit, and perished in the rebellion of Korah." So there are a lot of other races out there to be run. We've got to make sure that we get in the right race. Godliness is the only race that has an imperishable crown, and that will come from the scripture here in the next slide. But now, the Apostle Paul here has some advice to the athletes. And that's what we are. If we're in the race and we're running, we're the athletes. In 1 Corinthians 9, 24 through 27, the Apostle Paul there writes and says, "Do you not know that those who run in a race all run, but one receives the prize? Says, run in such a way that you may obtain it, and everyone who competes for the prize is temperate in all things. Now they do it to obtain a perishable crown, but we for an imperishable crown. Therefore I run thus, not with uncertainty. Thus I fight, not as one who beats the air, but I discipline my body to bring it in subjection, lest I have preached to others that I myself might become disqualified." Notice what's being said here. There's one praise, or one prize. And he says, you know, you need to run in a way to win it. Colossians 3 and verse 23 says, "And whatever you do, do it heartily as to the Lord and not to man." So if we're going to get in this race, if we're going to run this race, we need to do it with enthusiasm. We need to run heartily. We need to expect to win. Now, he said, but and in this passage also says that he disciplines his body. That's training. How many times have you gotten into a sport and advice is practice, 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 and then practice some more? And when you think about it, in my past life, I played some basketball. We would practice 4 days a week for a one-day game. Practice 3 hours a day for a game that didn't last more than an hour. But you train your body. You discipline your body. My old basketball coach had a fetish, I think, for running steps. You know, get in the bunny line and you miss the layup shot. Hit the steps. and you'd run up in the upper part of it, and you'd run about this. Okay, you can come down now. And you get down there, and you'd start in a scrimmage, and your guy would score.
Sellers.
Up on the steps. And what he was doing was trying to get us in shape so that we would have the endurance to play the game when it happened. So we need to understand that we need to discipline ourselves in the Scriptures. If you don't read the Scriptures, if you don't read the Bible, you're not going to be trained for the race. It also says that they eat right. Yeah. You say, where is that? Well, it's one of those things where it says we're temperate in all things, and all eating includes all things. But notice in Hebrews chapter 5 and verse 14, he says, but solid food belongs to those who are of full age, that is, who by reason of use have their senses exercised to discern both good and evil. You know, I used to referee some soccer, and they came out with these energy bars. I said, nah, those aren't any good. A guy gave me one night, and I ate it before the soccer game, and I felt a lot better after the game was over. I had a little more energy left. So, again, we need to eat right. We need to discipline our bodies. We need to put them in the right shape. And we need to understand, again, that ours is an imperishable crown, that it's a better crown. Well, we go out and we do all of these things, and I did them to play sports. We were looking to win the championship, which we never won. But, you know, that was the idea behind it. But that's a perishable crown. If we had won that, the trophy would be sitting over in Stebbins High School in a bookcase somewhere. And it will perish. It will not last through the end of this world. But the crown that we are running for, the prize that we are running for, is imperishable. We need to run by the rules. You know, and here again, 2 Timothy chapter 2 and verse 5, the Apostle Paul also says, if anyone competes in athletics, and that's what we're talking about, he is not crowned unless he competes according to the rules. You know, how many times have we had in a lifetime look back and somebody's crown was taken away because they didn't play right? They didn't obey the rules. Now, I can tell you from personal experience that in the sports world, there are three rule books. You don't play high school rules in a pro game. It's just a different game. But again, in the same way in all the sports. But having refereed, understand about the playing rules, or the rule book, I should say, there are playing rules, there are rules for the field of play, and there are rules for the things that you use in play. You know, as a soccer referee, we would go out and we would pace off the penalty area and the goal area and measure the height of the corner flags and measure the height and width of the goals. We'd do all this. Well, I got fortunate enough one year to be fourth official in a international friendly game between Italy and the United States women. The referee went out with a tape measure. He didn't trust, you know, 1 yard per step. He measured it off. He measured it off well before game time, so if there was a discrepancy, it could be corrected. And did a little baseball. Baseball mitts have a certain size, have a certain color. Baseball bats have a certain length and a certain diameter. And when you start looking at all these different things, it gave me a better appreciation for 2 Timothy chapter 3 and verse 17, which says that the man of God is thoroughly furnished. If we want to play the game, these rules certainly thoroughly furnish that game. And let me get caught up here. You know, the same thing with basketball. Now, what about the rules in our game? Well, the rules are in the New Testament. That thoroughly furnishes us unto every good work. Now, Paul had some concern with the rules. If you turn to Galatians chapter 2 and verse 2, Paul there says, and I went up by revelation and communicated to them that the gospel which I preach among the Gentiles, but privately to those who have reputation, lest by any means I might run or had run in vain. What Paul is saying is, I went up and confirmed the rules with, and a little bit later talk about Cephas and some of the others, but those who were pillars, supposedly, in the church. Paul said, I'm going to check out this. If I'm not running by the rules, then I have run in vain. Or if I do not have the rules, I might still run in vain if those don't get corrected. But notice in Galatians 2 again, chapter 9 and verse 10, it says, when James and Cephas and John, who seemed to be pillars, perceived the grace that had been given to me, they gave me and Barnabas the right hand of fellowship. And that, and he says that we should go to the Gentiles and they to the circumcised. And they desired only that we should remember the poor, the very thing which I was also eager to do. So what happens, Paul gets up there, he wants to check his rule book against theirs. When he gets there, he finds out that there's no difference. And he says he wants to encourage them to remember the poor, and he already did. So Paul is now writing that. Now, one of the things that I think about here is that there are some people who believe that Paul had a gospel for the Gentiles and Peter and the rest of them had a gospel for the Jews. And it was like the high school and the college rule books. They were a little bit different. But when we look at what he says here in Galatians, he says, no, there's no difference. You Jews have to obey the same gospel as the Gentiles do. You Jews have to worship in the same way the Gentiles worship. There is no difference. There is no separation. So when all this is said and done, we'll finish up with a runner's epitaph. Now, as we've looked at the things that are here, Paul writes again to Timothy, and he says in chapter 4, verses 6 through 8, 2 Timothy 4, 6 through 8, he says, for I am ready, already being poured out as a drink offering, and the time of my departure is at hand. I have fought the good fight. I have finished the race. I have kept the faith. Finally, there is laid up for me a crown of righteousness, which the Lord, the righteous judge, will give me on that day, and not to me only, but also to all who loved his appearing. Look at what that verse says. Paul says, I got in the right race. How do I know that? Because he says the crown's laid up for him. Paul got in the right race. Then it says he disciplined his spiritual body. And here he is. He has fought the good fight. He has finished the course. He has prepared everything. He's trained. He's done everything that he needed to do to run in this race. He trained his discipline, his spiritual body. He was temperate in all things. And he progressed to the solid food. He progressed to the food that would give him all the energy that he needed to run in this race and to win this race. He ran heartily, expecting to win. If we know anything at all about Paul's life, there were a lot of trials and a lot of tribulations, and he did a lot of things to stay in that race and run it heartily. He preached to the Gentiles. He tried to convert everybody that he could. And he ran by the rules. You know, if he did not run by the rules, then there wouldn't be a crown, would there? There wouldn't be a crown of righteousness which the Lord had laid up for him. We understand that from our athletics. You know, you don't get a championship trophy unless you run by the rules. But the real important point that I need to make right here at the end of this is that the crown that was laid up by Paul can be ours. Notice what he said there in the end of that verse when he says, not only for me, but all who loved his appearing. Now, this is the invitation, Jeff, where I'm going to finish up. You know, that crown is available to each one of you if you want to get in the race. That crown is available to each one of you if you will run by the rules. That crown is available, and like Jason was talking about this morning, if we do heartily, if we look, if we examine all these things, we can have that crown. If you want that crown, won't you come as we stand and sing?